You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Woodburn Corner, the Albion podcast that makes being an Albion fan slightly less tedious. I'm Graham Brown, I'm here with Joe Chapman.
Hello Graham, how are you?
I am alright. How tedious has been an Albion fan for you at the moment?
Come back to me at the end of the season.
Yeah, that probably says everything. So what we've got to show for you today? Well, we thought, seeing as it's a new year and we hopefully have got a few new listeners over the festive period, we would do a bit of a best of. So we're going to have a look back at some of the coolest things that that people have said to us over the course of this, the likes of Andy Johnson, Gary Megson, Colton Palmer, Liam Ridgewell, some of the funny stories that they've had. So we'll just round together some of their best ofs. And then we have a new interview as well that we'll lead on to, which is with Adil Nabi. I had a really, really good chat with him about how it came about to Albion, his findings there. What I thought was particularly interesting was the players that that were most helpful to him, which are probably some of the more unpopular players of his era. Joe, did you ever see Nabi play?
Do you know what? I don't think I did. Obviously, there was a number of occasions where he played in the under-23s and famously scored that hat-trick against Villa. But I don't actually think I ever saw Adil Nabi in the flesh. I saw Sam here, but never a deal.
No, well, that's the same for me as well. But I think he's someone that the three of them are kind of familiar to Albion fans, and I can tell you, just the nicest bloke. I mean, actually, the process of creating this podcast, you know, I spoke to a lot of footballers, and it's been great. You know, they say don't meet your heroes. Well, it's been brilliant talking to some people. Liam was great last week. Andy Johnson, great bloke. Adil Nabi, such a nice guy. Just could not do any more to help us. Asked him, he was kind of straight on there. Really, really good bloke, and that will come across. But anyway, first, we are going to take a look at some of our best moments of doing the podcast for the last few months.
So one of the things that we hope to do with this podcast is try and give people kind of an insight into the club, often as was, because I don't think players now could necessarily talk kind of freely about it. But the question what we plan to ask everyone is, what's your favourite story related to West Bromwich Albion? Can you think of a time there, something that fondly happened?
Millions. I mean, absolutely millions of them.
I can sense you're trying to work out the ones you're allowed to say.
I mean, yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to do, yeah, without trying to edit it. I mean, one of the ones, Jonathan Greening, when he signed, was like Jono's one of my closest mates, and he's as mad as a box of frogs. You know, I love him to bits. And we were in Portugal on a pre-season, and we were like, God, it's hot in it. And he said, yeah, it was a different sun, innit? And he thought there was two suns, you know, and you know, there we had like these houses, and there was four in a house, and girls, shut up. And there was me and Jono sharing a room, and there was Paul Robinson and all sharing a room, and we were playing Scrabble. And Jono is just, yeah, he ain't thick, he's just stupid and says stupid things. So I've got one three-letter word, thug, F-U-G, thug. And well, I had to leave the room, and me and Jono and Robbo, you know, absolutely screaming. And we had Writers' Dinners Award, and Mago asked me and Derek McInnes to go along, so we were sat on different tables and stuff like that. Anyway, we come back in the next day, and Mago, hey, all right, lads, meeting in the dressing room. He says, oh, Derek, Jono, have a good night last night? Yeah, not too bad, Gaffer. Oh, really, did you? Like that sort of thing. And so you might have to edit that. He said, the MD of Coca-Cola was sponsoring the league or something at the time. We had a table photograph and I'm sat there with my V's up and stuff like that. And ruined the picture and he wasn't very happy. But I mean, I sat next to Bully that night. We had a great night. I mean, there's the one where I had to show me bum in Rackham. Well, the lad showed his bum in Rackham's window if I'd scored a goal, and I showed me bum on the pitch. And, you know, it's just absolutely just crazy, crazy memories. You know, it's like when... Oh, what's his bloody name now? Nookie Bear, we used to call him, because his eyes are like that. Trevor Benjamin.
Yes.
When he signed in that, back then you always played cards. I mean, I was talking to Mora the other day, and the lads have all got their electrical gadgets and their headphones on. Now, after a win, he said the coach is just silent because everyone's on their gadgets. But we used to sit and play cards, and Trevor, his eyes were, he was boss-eyed, and I don't know whether he could see at all, to be honest. And you'd play cards, and you'd tell him sort of trumps were spades. And he was putting clubs down because he couldn't see, you know, he knew it was black, but he didn't know what one it was. And we used to fleece him all the time, you know. Oh, Trev's on, come on, let's play cards, because you take all his money off him, right, you know. Just so many great times, and all the staff at the club, you know, and we're just different class, you know. And it's, you know, there's still a few up there. I mean, I got quite a member of the WBA FPA, West Bromwich Albion Football Players Association, and I go up and do bits in the lounges now and again, and you know, I speak to Martin now and again, and started doing quite a lot of different charity events and sort of doing a table Q&As and things like that now, which is fantastic. And people say, "Oh, thanks ever so much. Do you want anything?" You don't want anything for doing it. You know, it's like I said to you earlier. I love sharing my experiences, because that's, forget about the money side of thing, because, you know, it's, everyone says about the money sort of nowadays, but the money was great when we were playing compared to what the man in the street was earning. The money was great when Sir Bobby Charlton and George Best were playing compared to, you know, unfortunately for them guys, they never had the infrastructure of like the PFA or guidance to how to look after it, whereas we did, and these lads don't have to, you know, they can do what they like. But the best thing that I've ever took out of it is just the whole thing. Just such an honour and a privilege to play for every single club I was at. You know, my fondest memories are at West Brom because of what we did and the rapport we had with the supporters and stuff like that. And, you know, we won the championship with Nottingham Forest and had great times there. But West Brom will always be sort of the number one.
Tell me one funny story that from your career as a footballer. What, putting you on the spot again, what would it be?
Well, it would have been the one that's in the book about the QPR game. I mean, that was quite surreal, really. It wasn't planned, it wasn't preempted, and, you know, I was stitched up by Waddle and Woods. They both knew that they weren't playing. You know, I thought we were all in the same boat until the team was named on the Saturday, and, you know. But As I say, it is what it is.
What's the deal then? Not without giving too much away, to talk us through it to anybody who's not ready.
Well, we had a game. We're playing QPR New Year's Day, yeah. And we went down to London the day before.
When you're at Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah, we went down to London the day before, but Trevor lived in London, so he went back to his house, and we got down there at lunchtime, and the game's not till the following lunchtime, so we. The lads were going to go and have a few drinks at the pub that was local, and it ended up being their session. So at 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm coming out Tramps nightclub, and we've got a game at 12 o'clock against QPR. And then we get a team meeting the next morning. And them two aren't playing. Waddle and Woods, they both failed fitness tests. They know they weren't playing, and I was playing. So, you know, it was a nightmare, because, you know. But we ended up winning. We were on a, you know, 19 game unbeaten run, and, you know, as you do, at the end of the day, I knew what I was doing. But when it comes down to it's time to play, the whistle goes, you get on with it, you do what you've got to do, it makes no difference. And as I say in the book, if alcohol had affected my performances and the way I trained, I would have knocked it on the head. But it didn't. I trained better or played better when I had a drink.
And tell us how Trevor found out.
Well, because I didn't know, but Woodsy was in there, and like Woodsy knows Rod Stewart, and he was in there with his missus, and I see some guy with his ear all over the place, and I see what, but And so as we're coming out, we get photographed. But they weren't there for us. They were there for Rod Stewart. It just so happens that we give him a likely story and that whatever.
Chris Woods is back or something. Yeah, dodgy tracksuit.
No, well, a Mizuno tracksuit. My sponsors were happy, but you know, yeah. So we had to donate some money to charity, but it caused a problem because I think it got to a point with Trevor Francis that you know he found that he was thinking that I was hard work to work with, but it's ironic he sold me, and then his first job. After he got the sack from Sheffield Wednesday at Birmingham, he tried to buy me, make me the first signing for Birmingham.
Any big dressing room personalities at the Albion? Is there any stories you can tell about any dressing room hijinks?
Well, to be fair, I probably had the most one where I got stitched up with the toilet incident. When I came in the next day, Stephen Reid and James Morrison and a couple of others had filled my locked in a change room with all toilet paper and everything. So as I opened it, it all emptied out and fell out on me. So I think that's probably the biggest one. You know, the normal antics of, you know, taking stuff and hiding it and hanging people's clothes up and hiding cars so people couldn't find it. I mean, that was probably the big ones. And obviously, once Craig Gardner's a big character, I had a good time with it at Birmingham and done a lot of pranks there with him. And when he came, obviously had a short time, but you know, he's always a good crack in the change room, that's sure.
So I was going to ask you who would be the principal culprit of hiding cars? Was is that a Craig Gardner thing?
It's a Craig Gardner thing. If he's around, that would be a big one. He'd be main culprit. I mean, me and Craig hid someone physio's car in masseuse's car in Birmingham and hid it, and he was nearly going to call the police because it was his dad's car, worried that it's been stolen. And he went straight to Craig and then came for me. So, yeah. Anything goes missing or anything hidden or anything done, it's probably Craig being bored and being injured and everyone else outside. So you've got to be careful there.
So who was your mate, your best mate at the Albion?
Yeah, I mean, we had a few. I mean, we went around. I obviously knew Byers Mile from my early young days at Villa. So I knew him very well, which was great. Fozzie, who got on really well with because I knew him from him coming on loan to Birmingham.
Of course, yeah.
James Morrison got on really well with. Graham Dorans, only lived around the corner from him, so got on really well with him. You know, Stephen Reid, obviously, got on really well with him, being an older one as well. So we had a lot of good, you know, lot of players that got on really well with each other. You know, any Christmas party, any night out, or any social events, there was a lot of people there, which was good, and that's the type of bond we had. That's why we've done so well in them two years, as it was.
Yeah, I think it really came across, really, you know, as a team. Yeah. You could kind of see that it was a team that was sort of close-knit, and a lot of them are still there, aren't they? You know,
it's no surprise to me. You know, that's what West Brom are. They are a team that work hard for each other, you know, want to win the game, get 3 points for each other, want to work hard, and want to win the game together. That is West Brom. That is their makeup, and you know, that's why they've done so well over the years. And you know, that's why I really enjoyed my time there. You know, I love working with people that want to work hard, want to win a game, and you know, it suited me perfectly. Really.
Gary, you laid the foundations almost for this club and their Premiership run. The way when you came in 2000 and you kept them in the first division and then progressed.
Yeah.
Just give us your thoughts on that time.
I did my interview. There was more board members than players. They were all around this thing. We met up at a hotel just off the M1, and they asked me, "What did you know about West Brom?" was one of the questions. And me being me, I just told them what I thought, and I says, "I know all about your past, Bobby Hope, Jeff Bomber, all those people. And I know you're always falling out with each other all the time. They kept changing over the board all the time." I says, "So." And one of them got rubbed up the wrong way, but the chairman at the time says, well, he's honest and he's right, so anyway, it must have gone okay. But you just, there was, at some point I'm going to ask the club if they'll let me write this book that I'd like to do, because it's not a nasty thing, but it's I think it'd be quite entertaining for the people around here. But one of the things that happened, I've brought Frank Burrows in here, and we were training, and we had half a rugby pitch to train on at the time, not this. And I didn't want to upset any of the players, so I brought them all in, and we all played against a game against each other, but it was something like a 12-a-side. It was stupid, like you're playing the school. But I wanted to keep everybody together, so Frank was on the side. So we played for about half an hour. So I went jogging over afterwards. I says, what do you think? He says, we've got three players. Oh, Christ. I said, three? He went, yep. You, Cyril, and Lee Hughes. And he weren't far off. But it just needed a complete sea change. It was, you know, there's a lot of players here using it as a rest home. It was a great place to be, good club, poodle about. Never get anywhere, just finish above relegation, and in a bad year you might go down. That time, that game that I was talking about, the young players that we had, as soon as the whistle went to finish, they were gone. Nobody stayed behind, nobody practiced, nobody brought the balls in, all the bibs. And it was just like a bit of a jolly up club. And it just needed a complete change of attitude. We brought players in like McInnes, like Appleton, like Fox, people like that. And then Tony Butler, you know, just honest players. We needed honest, good players. And we signed five of them after a game at Portsmouth because I thought we were going down. And I'm sure we would have gone down. We just needed to change for change's sake. And we brought in people who weren't fit. We brought in people who were in reserve teams. Tony Butler from Port Vale, which was below us, just to get that little bit of a boost. And, you know, fortunately we stayed up and then kicked on from there.
Adele, thank you ever so much for coming on and seeing us at Woodman Corner. I'll start off by asking you the question that we ask everyone who comes on our podcast. Tell us your favourite story about West Bromwich Albion.
Well, I've got quite a few, to be honest, because I've been there since, 7, 8 years old. As a fan, obviously growing up when I was younger, probably the game, I think it was the last day of the season, I think it was getting to Portsmouth,
Yeah, oh God, yeah.
We were there, I was there with my dad. We got tickets, obviously, because to the club. And that game, I think it was 2-0, might have been Jeff Horsfield, I think it might have been Kieran Richardson.
That's right, yeah. Kieran Richardson, about 60 minutes, Jeff Horsfield in the dying moments, yeah.
Yeah, I just remember that was probably the first time I thought, wow, I can't wait to be, you know what I mean? I'd love to just be there and actually be a part of the game one day in the future. And
yeah,
just that whole day was just unbelievable. I think that, as a fan growing up as a kid, was probably my best moment. Obviously, playing wise, I think probably the hat trick at Villa at the Hawthorns was probably one of my favourite moments. And obviously, then sitting on the bench at stadiums like, you know, in the Premier League at Man City, and obviously other football clubs, being involved in them was just fantastic.
I wanted to ask you about the hat-trick against Villa Under-21s, because I mean, it's an amazing thing to have as a young man. I mean, how does that feel? Obviously, it's in the kind of infancy of your career and that, but it must have been an amazing night. You know, you must have not got much sleep after doing that.
Not because, obviously, I used to live not far from the Villa ground, so going to train into West Brom, I used to go past the Villa ground every day, so I always used to look forward to playing against the Villa. So to score a hat-trick against them, oh, was just, you know what I mean, as a young kid, you're just overwhelmed because you'd be happy to score a hat-trick in PE.
Yeah.
So doing it there was just fantastic, and I don't think that'll be with me for the rest of my life now.
So how did you are from the kind of Brummie side. How did it come to pass that you, as such a young man, ended up at the Albion?
You know what? I think because Villa training ground was quite far away from where I live.
Yeah.
And obviously West Brom, where they train, is not far. It's only literally past Handsworth, and then Germany's literally 15 minutes. So yeah, at a young age, obviously from my parents, you know, it would be difficult to travel. I think the training ground in Villa's in Tamworth, so it would be easy just to go 20 minutes up the road to go to the West Brom training ground. So really, that's how it happened, and from there I just continued it, and that's where I just carried on and just progressed, really.
And I think you're kind of from an era of players. I mean, I'm 35 now, and I sort of remember for the first kind of 10 or 15 years of supporting Albion, we barely really brought anyone through. There was Danny Gabbydon.
Okay.
I'm struggling for any other names, and then all of a sudden we kind of got to an era where we were starting to bring through good young players. It must have been an exciting time, I would have thought, for you to be there. You know, when there's some big names kind of, you know, that they've made out around. You know, what was it like? You know, being out in an Albion youth team in that era.
Well, awesome, because you see, like, obviously lads like Chris Ward, you know, Romain Sawyer, Kamaru Saido, Berahino, and now obviously the boys that are coming through now. Do you know what I mean? Seeing them boys progressing, obviously I'm younger than obviously the boys up now, so to see them can only give you like motivation and inspiration, really, to see them boys coming through. And now obviously they're doing absolutely fantastically well in their teams that they're at now. So, you know, they're my mates. We've grown up since we were younger, so to see them doing well is just fantastic. And do you know what I mean? Just happy for them, and just, you know, if I can do the same thing, then that's sound.
Who would you say is the most talented player you played with? You know, you played with all these kids before they kind of broke through. Who was the kind of who had the most raw talent of anyone you played with in the Albion youth ranks?
That's a hard one. That's actually a tough one.
Yeah, there's a lot of names.
Did you know what? We were all literally quality. That's not even boasting. We were actually good players, and you can see now that. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that just to say it, because obviously they were playing at a high level and doing fantastically well. But I couldn't put a name to that one. That's such a tough question, because we're all good players.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an incredible kind of turnaround, as I say.
Just to put one name to it, because I think there'll be a lot of them that'll be upset if I said one name and I can say the other.
That's understandable. So if I can ask you a bit sort of specifics of him, so do you play much with Jonathan Lico? He's a player that Albion, you know, seems to be doing well out at Bristol now. Albion fans are kind of looking forward to coming back and seeing if he ever realises his potential at the club. I mean, what were your experiences with him?
He's a real talent. He's got everything, to be honest with you, and just the way he grows as a young man, and when he comes back, and going to Bristol is just fantastic for him, just to go out there, get games for himself and come back and do what he's doing there, because I hear he's doing fantastically well. So he come back and do that in an Albion shirt, and he's only a young lad now, he's 18, 19, so, you know, time's on his side, and I think that going out to Bristol would only help him.
Do you think he's got...
Big prospect.
Do you think he's a Premier League player of the future?
Yeah, of course, 100%. Well, he's played a few games already in the Premier League. Yeah. So at a young age, at what, 18, that he's played already, you know what I mean? You know, he's got a lot of time ahead of him, so he's definitely one for West Brom, yeah, definitely.
And then what about Chris Wood? I mean, obviously Chris Wood is a big name in English football now. You know, he's leading the line at a team that's doing well in the Premier League. Did you see that coming? Was he a player you would have thought would have gone that far?
Definitely, because Woodsy's build is, you know, suited to the way he plays and, you know, the way he's been playing. So, with everyone, you have ups and downs, do you know what I mean? And he's had, obviously, downs as everyone does, and now he's flying, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Got a big move in the summer to Burnley, and now he's flying again, scoring goals in the Premier League. So, you always seen it with Woodsy, to be honest. He's always been, you know, scoring goals from when he's been at the youth teams at West Brom and all the way through. So that was always going to come. But with everyone, with every player will say you have ups and downs in your career. So,
and I guess probably the player that most people associate you with, there's yourself and Sider up front for the youth team for an awful long time. You're both kind of a similar age. I mean, what were your experiences playing with him, and how far? I mean, obviously. His goals have tailed off lately, but he's got a big move. He's considered a big player. How far do you see him going? Do you think he's going to sort of bring it back and the goals will come back again?
Yeah, with Sider, you got nothing to worry about, because when he starts scoring, you know what I mean, he's unplayable.
Yeah.
When he's firing and when he's playing regularly and what have you, and with any striker, do you know what I mean? You go through them patches where everything you touch goes in, and then you get them touches where you can try your hardest and it just won't go in sometimes. So, you know, Sido's proven. Everybody knows he's a fantastic footballer and he's a fantastic goal scorer. So he'll have no issues. He'll be a top player, and he's already a top player. So
yeah, there's
no issues with that.
So when you were at... I'll name a few names there. So do you still knock about with some of these people? Are you still friends with some of these people we're talking about?
Obviously we've grown up from a young age, so do you know what I mean? We always keep in touch with each other, and you know, we're friends. We're not just like, you know, teammates or what have you, ex-teammates, or do you know what I mean? We're all mates because we've all grown up from young ages playing together, so we all always talk to each other and see how each other's doing, which is always nice.
So one of the things we're trying to do with this podcast is kind of try and give people kind of an an inside view of what it's like at the club, and you know, just get a bit of feel for the kind of personalities and that. So can you remember when you were there, who were the big personalities in the dressing rooms? Can you remember things people said, people did? What are your sort of memories of in the dressing room at the Albion when you were there?
I think as a young player growing up, obviously you've got people that have been at the club for a long time, people like Chris Brunt, James Morrison, them guys are always like, you know, always willing to help the young boys, especially myself, because I used to train them since a young age. So being with them guys all the time, they were an awesome help. Then obviously the new guys that came in after a while, like, you know, your Darren Fletchers, your Joel and Les Scotts, that have won major trophies in England. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, we see them as like, do you know what I mean, role models. So, you know, I still speak to Julian now, and he's just like a mentor, really, just to help me out when things are not going so good or when things are going good.
Oh, that's good. I mean, how big a thing is that? Because you hear that a lot about, you know, how important it is people learn from, you know, players who've had success. But on the face of it, you know, on almost any level, you and Julian Lescott are almost completely the opposites on the pitch. You're playing the opposite sides, opposite physiques. And so on. But I mean, what tangibly can you learn from someone like Julian? Is it just the kind of the aura you go out onto the pitch with?
No, 100%, because let's be honest, he's been there, done everything that you'd want to achieve in football.
Yeah.
And he's probably been around world, but no, not probably, he has been and played with world-class footballers. So if you can just take, you know, just speak to him and just tap into this sort of, like, you know, advice, if you could take just a little bit from someone like that about how does, you know, David Silva work, or Sergio Aguero work, or do you know what I mean? Just to get little tips from him, because he's been there, been in the change room with them boys, so, you know what I mean? And he's always willing to, you know, give that advice, and someone of his, you know, stature, it's just fantastic just to hear that from him, because it can only help me and help me in my career.
Yeah, that's really nice to hear. So I mean, you understand the kind of nature of the youth setup now. You know, and that's it's obviously made huge leaps forward over a period probably in the early 2000s. What do you think about the structure of the club now? Are we still going to be attracting good young players? And you've got people like Sam Field and Lico coming through. Is it still kind of a top quality youth structure we've got there, do you think?
Of course, yeah. West Brom's always been a club that helped young players when they're really young, from like 9 to 16. It's probably one of the best in the country. In terms of coaching, in terms of the coaches being hands-on with the young lads, and, you know, just the care that they take in the academy system is just fantastic, I think. If there's any young kids that are, you know, in the local areas or want to join an academy, I think West Brom have to be up there as a young kid going in.
Good.
Because they teach you how to be, you know, a better human being as well, not just a better footballer. So it's one of them football clubs that
just
ground you very good.
Is there any one person at the club that you would particularly thank for your progression as a player? You know, it'd be interesting to get the background. So you mentioned Julian Lescott. I don't know if it'd be him, but is there any one person you would say he's the person that gave me the most help at the Albion?
What, in terms of a player?
Well, no, generally, any person, backroom staff, a coach, anyone, one person?
One person, impossible, because there's been so many.
Really?
Because I've been there and seen so many people come that have helped me loads and then gone, and then people that have come in, helped me loads, do you know what I mean, and then gone on, and then, because I've seen so many come and go, and so many that have helped me. Oh. Obviously, people like in the academy, obviously Mark Harrison, obviously Dan Ashworth that was there before. You know, I mean, obviously now when I was youth team, I had like Keith Downing, Jimmy Shan, and obviously then you have like your coaches like Steve Clark that helped me when I was coming through, Roberto Di Matteo that helped me, and then obviously loads of players like Peter Odemwingie, Julian Lescott, Anichebe, Malumbu, all these boys that continue to help me now and I keep in contact with. So there's so many.
Do you know, it's interesting.
It wouldn't be nice not to just say one, but there's so many in different walks of life.
It's interesting, in the course of this, I keep coming past people who have nothing but nice things to say about Peter Odemwingie. Can you talk to us about how he helped you?
Who, Peter?
Yeah.
Peter, when I was there, he was first class with me.
Really?
It was like someone who I used to speak to all the time, because I got injured near enough the time that he was injured as well, and we really got to know each other a lot more. And I don't know where people get some of the stuff they say about him, but I can only say high praise about the guy. He's not just a footballer, a world-class footballer, but just a top human being.
Good. I think history will tell better for Peter. I mean, yeah, the way things happened were sort of quite obscure. But I think Albion fans are already coming around to the idea that, you know, he was a godsend really to have someone that knew how to put the ball in the back of the net at the Premier League level.
Yeah, he scored 20 goals and you know, I mean, put us in a good position.
So tell us how things going for you now and your brothers. I mean, I think yeah, they're all names that Albion fans hold dear and remember. How are things going for you all?
Going okay. Obviously, I'm at Peterborough United. Samir's at Carlisle United, and the Heath is at Burnley. We're doing okay. Obviously, you know, we know that the West Brom fans, you know, really, really took to us while we were there, and you know, we can't thank them enough. But even now, we get a lot of, like, you know, support from the West Brom fans, and we don't even play for the club no more. So, you know, that's overwhelming, because we still look at the results. We still speak to people that are still at the club now, and just to see some of the comments that they write on social media, just overwhelming sometimes. And you know, we're doing okay. We're just going about our business, and you know, hopefully one day we can get back to the highest level.
Well, I'd just like to say, I think that's reciprocated from the fans. I think you're, I mean, Albion fans en masse just really hope the best things kind of happen for you. And I'll just like to say, top man, you know, I asked a load of people to come on our podcast. You're one of the first people to come back and say yes, so I really, really appreciate it. And on behalf of Albion fans, I hope it goes well for you in the future.
No problem. Always for the West Brom fans, I've always got time for always, without a doubt,
man. You're a gentleman. So again, thank you to Adil Nabi for that, and that's all for this week. Podcasts are probably going to become a bit more regular now across January, hopefully with a bit more business coming in. Looking forward to January transfer window, Joe?
I am. I'm intrigued by what Albion can do, to be honest. We all know about the financial fair play restrictions and that kind of thing, and Albion are going to have to, you know, box clever, I think. It might mean that players have got to leave before they can come in, but I'm interested to see what kind of player Alan Pardew's after.
Yes, so as I said, keep an eye out for Breakout Podcast. If ever there's anything to chat about, we'll get straight on here. And as I always say, if you like our podcast, tell your friends. If you don't, come in and help us make them better. This is an Albion fan podcast, so we want you to get involved. You can reach me and Joe by email. We're very easy to find. Joe Chapman and Graham Brown on Twitter, or Woodman Podcast on Twitter. In the meantime, happy new year to you all, and onwards and upwards to the next Woodman Podcast.